Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I love geeking out at gardens and talking about gardens and going to gardens, and I love talking to gardening lovers. And so we have a great show for you today. If you missed the first hour, you can go ahead and check it out on iHeartRadio, Audio Boom, wherever you listen to podcasts. It will be playing there, but you can hear all of the show in entirety. We have had a busy morning. We're answering all of your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And we would love to hear from you. We got a whole line of text messages we're going to get to, and we're going to go to Bill this morning in just a few minutes. We are going to do, I think we do have the dirty word of the day.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is actually an explanation of the difference between bacteria and fungal diseases. So is it a bacterial disease or is it a fungal disease? And that's important for you to know the difference. So one of homeowners' biggest dilemmas is determining what's wrong with their plants. Here in Florida, disease issues are prevalent because of the state's perfect trifecta for plant problems. We have the weather, humidity, and lots of rain. We have the disease pathogens in the atmosphere, in the ground, and we have the plants susceptible to the diseases and fungal issues. These pathogens can severely affect the plant's quality, its production in fruiting, and in flowers. So understanding the differences between the diseases is crucial for effective management and also control strategies. So the bacterial and fungal pathogens exhibit distinct characteristics that influence the plant's interactions. So recognize these are important. So bacterial diseases are caused by various pathogens such as Pseudomonas, Xanthomonas, and Erwinia. Now these pathogens can affect plants through wounds or natural openings. So it's very important when you cut plants, shrubs, and trees that you have a sterile tool. That's very important. Common symptoms include wilting, leaf spots, blights, and cankers. Bacterial infections often result in water-soaked lesions and the production of ooze. The spread of the diseases can be spread through water, contaminated tools, insects, and infected seeds. High humidity and warm temperatures generally favor bacteria proliferation. Now, fungal diseases are caused by fungi from various groups, including Ascomycetes, Basomycetes, and Oomycetes. They invade plant tissues, often entering through the roots or damaged surfaces. The symptoms include mold growth, rust, smut, mildews, and rots. Fungal infections typically result in discolored patches, powdery or downy growths on the plant surfaces, and decay of plant tissues. Fungi is spread through spores, which can be dispersed by wind, water, soil, insects, and contaminated equipment. Cool, wet conditions are generally conducive to fungal growth, or if you're overhead watering your plants or irrigating at night, that can contribute to fungal issues too. So effective management requires an integrated approach. You want to combine your cultural habits with biological and chemical controls. Cultural practices include rotating your crops to break the disease cycle, using certified disease-free seeds and planting materials, implementing proper irrigation, proper drainage, and timing to avoid excessive moisture, and then removing and destroying infected plant debris to reduce pathogen sources. So especially like black spot with roses, you want to pick up all the diseased petals and leaves on the ground and throw them away. You do not want to leave them on the ground. Biological control includes utilizing beneficial microorganisms that antagonize pathogens and help suppress disease development. You can also use resistant or tolerant crop varieties, and then chemical controls applying bactericides, especially when used with your integrated pest management, is important. Bactericides are more effective at the first sign of infection, but fungicides have to be applied preventively before infection. If you've gotten a fungus several years in a row, apply the fungicide 4 to 6 weeks ahead of the onset of the disease. You also want to use seeds that have been treated with appropriate chemicals that can help prevent the establishment of diseases. Now, this is very important. So bacterial diseases, you can usually stop at the first sign of it, but fungicides, you have to apply before you get it, all right? And you can find bactericides and fungicides in your independent nurseries, also in your box stores, and then also online. So that's the difference there, Lizzie. Let's go to George in Melbourne. Good morning, George. How can I help you?
Good morning, Teresa. Wow, I'm surprised to be on. I have a question about sea grapes.
Okay.
My sea grapes, I've had them in the ground for 3 years easily, and they don't give me any grapes. They're about 6 feet tall. There's three of them.
Okay.
So I don't understand.
Okay. So, George, you're in West Melbourne. Your sea grapes, do you think they're edible?
I was told that they are, but I haven't seen a grape.
Yes. So how often do you fertilize?
Never.
Okay. That's one of the reasons. So your plants, especially when you want them to bear fruit that's edible, you want to make sure that you're fertilizing on a regular basis, because what they do have is the energy for the plant to survive. They just don't have the energy to put out new fruiting, okay? So you need the flowers. And so have you seen it flowering?
Negative.
Okay. There are certain varieties of sea grapes, so I don't know which one you've gotten, but some of them do not produce fruit easily. Okay, so that may be one of the issues. I would check to see what kind you have, and then start fertilizing on a regular basis with a phosphorus fruit fertilizer. You can use Osmocote for blooming flowers and get the flowers growing so you can get the fruit. Thank you so much, George. Bill, you've been so patient. We should have taken you next. We'll take you right after the show. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens on Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, I would love to help you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And we will get to your questions. Let's go to Bill the patient. Bill in DeLand. Good morning, Bill. Thank you so much for hanging on. I appreciate it.
Good morning, Teresa. Hey, we were visiting the Kanapaha Botanical Gardens up in Gainesville and saw a coral tree in flower. It was beautiful. Erythrina crystallis.
Yes, it is gorgeous.
Is it a good residential landscape tree in a yard, and will it do well in DeLand, and is it available in the nursery trade?
It can be available in the nursery trade. You have to look for it, but it is a wonderful color. Oh, it is just amazing. It will grow in DeLand because it is tropical and subtropical, which is why you see it growing in the Kanapaha Gardens, and so it can take a little bit of cold temperatures, unlike the jacaranda or the royal poinciana. The royal poinciana is the coral tree. Yes, it can grow there. Now, it grows in kind of like a flat mound. So you want to put it, it does get big. So do you have a large yard?
Yeah, I do have an area I could put it, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. So give it the space it needs. It will grow. I would suggest you go to Quality Green Specialist in DeLand and ask Dana to order one for you.
Okay.
Because he will do that. And then that way you will get one that has the provenance in Central Florida and will do well for you. All right?
Okay. Yeah, I saw those trees up at Kanapa. They were pruned. They were pruned back. There were some large branches pruned back.
Would yes.
that have been cold damage that they pruned back?
It might have been. You know, especially this year, we got it so early in December last year. We had that really hard mm-hmm. cold snap. That could have been. Yes. So it will. Planting it right now would be good because that gives you a little bit of time before winter. But if we do mm-hmm. get a really cold snap, it will knock it back. But it should survive.
Okay. And I wanted to mention, I'm a professional nurseryman, and your plant disease segment was very timely. Plant diseases in the nursery are something I dealt with all the time, fungal diseases and bacterial diseases.
And so Bill, am I right? You got to make sure you identify it first so you really can take care of the problem.
Absolutely. And our first line of defense was cultural control. You know, we tried to find the right environment for the plant, if the plant needed shade or if it needed protection from the summer heat, that type of thing, so the plants don't get stressed. Plants are like people. If they get stressed, they're more susceptible to disease.
Right, and especially when you plant them too close together or up against the house where there's a lack of air circulation. That is stressful.
That's right.
So I'm so
That's
glad
right.
you're out there and listening. Thank you so much, Bill. Let me know
okay,
if you get it, okay? Let me know when you get it, because I'd like to see a picture of it.
I will check with Dana. Thank you.
You're welcome, hon. Thank you. That was Bill in DeLand. And if you have never seen a coral tree, they are breathtaking. That is wonderful. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. Let's go to our text messages. And so we have, let me pull it down. Here we go. Let's see. Yes. Okay, so Scott Norman Beach, perfect text message, Scott. Recently, I had to remove an oak tree in my yard, and there are sucker sprouts coming up from the roots in a large area around the stump. How do I kill the stump, and how do I get rid of the sucker growth permanently? Thank you. And so this is a great question. Okay, so let me... great question. Sucker stopper, okay? Sucker stopper is what you're looking for, Scott. Sucker stopper. And that will get rid of the suckers, and you use it. You'll probably have to reapply it for about 6 months, all right? And then stump remover, Bonide, and Spectracide, and then also Fertilome. There are stump remover granules and different types of liquid that you can buy at the independent nurseries, the box stores, and probably even the hardware stores, you know, that you can check with them. But the first one is called Sucker Stopper, and just follow the instructions, and then the Stump Remover, and Bonide, B-O-N-I-D-E, Grow More is another one that you can get, and then Spectracide Stump Remover, and Fertilome stump remover. So that will help you out there, Scott. Great question. You do want to get rid of them, and that stump remover will make it, it will do the work for you, Mother Nature's work for her, a little bit more quickly. Let's go to Scott in Palm Bay. Good morning, Scott. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. I have a question about tomatoes. I used to grow good tomatoes years ago, and then all of a sudden they just stopped producing. Someone said it was probably nematodes. So I haven't tried them in 10 years. I put a couple plants in. They took off like wildfires, started producing, and then all of a sudden they stopped again.
Yes.
Now, someone told me I should put, I'm going to spell this product, D-I-A-T-O-M-A-C-E-O-U-S
okay.
in the ground.
Diatomaceous. Yeah, diatomaceous. Okay, so no, I'm not going to tell you have nematodes. What kind of soil are you planting them in?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It seems like halfway decent soil.
Right.
I mean, there's some sand in there also.
But it has some organic material in there?
No.
Okay, it's all sand. Well, you could have nematodes, but I don't think that's the problem. So I think it's the warm temperatures. So tomatoes do not produce fruit when the temperatures, they do not pollinate, okay, so that they start to produce fruit when temperatures are over 85 degrees. They stop producing. And if you have lack of rain or not getting enough water, then they're going to curl. They're going to get a lot of damage. So the tomatoes, when we see nematodes, unless you really have a really nematode heavy in your landscape, which is all sand, that may be a problem. But we don't, tomatoes aren't in the ground long enough to get, you know, nematodes. And so I'm thinking that it's more likely that they're just not producing, and the heat and the drought are doing the issue. So you want to try, what I would do then is do a raised bed or a container. Get a large container and put in good organic soil in it so that your tomatoes can grow. I would start planting seeds in August or transplants in late August, September, and you'll be able to grow tomatoes all the way through wintertime.
Oh, thanks for the tip. I appreciate it, Teresa.
Okay. And then in the springtime, you can plant new ones. So we can plant tomatoes twice a year, in the fall and in this early, late winter, early spring. And that way, but when the temperatures get above 85 degrees, tomatoes just don't work.
Well, I'll shoot for the fall because these couple plants seem to be done producing. They're not doing anything. I'm wasting. I do water them every morning, but.
Well, watering them every morning may not be good either, too. So you just want to make sure you're using good organic soil or adding organic amendments to your ground so that your soil can hold on to the moisture longer, okay? And that way you only have to water them maybe 2 to 3 times a week. Now, cherry tomatoes and Everglades tomatoes produce fruit all year round. The heat doesn't bother them. So you can try those, too.
I heard you earlier in the morning, and that made me think about my tomato problem. But hey, Teresa, I have a quick problem about weeping hibiscus.
Okay.
I heard that segment also earlier.
Sure.
I have it right next to a azaleas, and of course, I feed the azaleas the acid food. Now, does that affect the hibiscus? You think?
No, they'll absorb it, and you won't. I mean, you can use the same fertilizer on the hibiscus. That's not a problem.
Oh, okay. My weeping hibiscus is kind of like a combination. I have shoots that go straight up, and then I have some that weep.
Uh-huh.
Now, those ones that go straight up, should I cut them off where the weeping starts?
If you want to keep just the weeping branches, sure, you can do that.
Yeah, I'm more after the weeping one. Right now, it's kind of unique because, like I say, it's kind of a twofer. But I would rather have just the weeping. That's
sure, you can cut off the taller branches. That's fine. That are going straight up. That's not a problem.
Teresa, thank you very much for answering my 3 questions.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That was Scott in Palm Bay. If you have a question, we have just 30 more minutes of Better Lawns and Gardens. You can hear us every morning on Saturday morning, 7 to 9 a.m., or you can hear the podcast, Lizzie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just go to betterlawns.com and you can catch anything that you miss and also listen to other episodes. Also, here's my perfect thing. People get worried about calling and asking a dumb question. Well, we had someone who called earlier asking about a weeping hibiscus. I'd never heard of it before. And then in the next hour, we had somebody else that was like, hey, I've got a weeping hibiscus. Now I've got questions. So always call or text or even email Teresa your question.
And that would be really wonderful. I would love to answer it. Okay, so I have, let's see, ever-blooming Pinky in Port Orange. She's got an ever-blooming mulberry. Just gave her a wonderful harvest. She pruned it back in February. Now it's over 20 feet tall again. When do I prune it to keep it manageable? Pinky, every time you harvest a big production, then you could go ahead and trim it back then. Okay, so I would say if it's producing fruit every 3 to 6 months, cut it back after you take all the mulberries off, and it'll keep to the height you'd like. All right, so you can trim off, you can prune it back by a third, okay, and it's not going to be a problem. All right, sounds like you got a great tree there, though. It's wonderful for the birds, gardening for wildlife, and also for people. If it's Saturday morning, from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I love to help people with their gardens. If you have a gardening question, you can give me a call. 1-888-455-2967. Lizzie will put you on the board and we'll get right to you. And if you'd like to text, you can text 23680. I'd like to say good morning to Ira. He celebrated a birthday this week, so happy birthday, Ira. And all of my listeners in Port St. Lucie, in also Miami, Key West, Texas, Lizzie. We got a large following in Texas.
Nice.
And then also in South Carolina. So, and then also to all the Garden Club members. If you are new to Florida and would like to learn more about gardening, I will tell you that look out, search it. Your local garden club, and you will find the nicest members, ladies and gentlemen, and they are so wonderful and helpful, and you will enjoy the events they have. So let me get to the text messages here. So someone out there needs to know about root knot nematode control. They didn't give me a name or a city, but someone out there needs that information. So you want to look for Monterey, Monterey, nematicide, Nematicide, Monterey nematicide, and that will help you with your root knot nematodes, but also, too, adding organic amendments to the soil. Nematodes do not like organic rich soil, okay? They love sandy conditions. And so if you are getting issues with nematodes, try adding more organic compost or organic materials to organic amendments to your soil, and that will help out tremendously. So also, too, Debbie in Tallahassee, she purchased milkweed, but when she researched the plant, she discovered it is a tropical milkweed instead of the native milkweed. And as you know, it harbors parasites that can endanger the caterpillar, can cause deformities, and then also prevents them from migrating. And so should she return it or just cut it back in the fall? Well, Debbie, I think you should just cut it back in the fall so that it doesn't hurt the butterflies that overwinter here, and it doesn't keep them from going on migration if they're one of the traveling monarchs. So, yeah, don't throw it away. Just cut it back in the fall. That'll be great. And then also, too, we have someone who is looking. Oh, I know who it is. It's Tom in Lake Nona. He says, I'm looking to grow a beautiful red rose for my girlfriend. What's the best variety of rose so that it is red and has a larger bloom and a delicious fragrance? Okay, so Tom, these are my favorite red roses. Okay, the very first one is Mr. Lincoln. It's a hybrid tea rose. You can make beautiful cut flowers with it. It is deep red. It's a hybrid tea. That's going to give you wonderful, wonderful fragrance. The next one is Fragrant Cloud. It's a little bit of a peachy red, coral red, but it is gorgeous, and it has been put into the Hall of Fame for its fragrance and beauty, Fragrant Cloud. It's also a tea rose. But then there's also Double Delights, Tom. And it is cream in the center and then brilliant red on the outside. And it is my favorite. And it has an amazing fragrance. So those are my top three. One is just a creamy red or creamy white and a red. And then Fragrant Cloud is a coral red. Mr. Lincoln is the deep red and makes beautiful cut flowers and is very fragrant. Hope that helps. You're a nice guy. That's wonderful. So let's see. Going back one more. Let's go to Eileen in Stewart. Good morning, Eileen. How can I help you?
Good morning. My question is, can I use the fertilizer 14-14-14 on my clusias and my other hedges that I have around. I'll tell you a small story. I was recommended by the place where I purchased my clusias to use 14-14-14.
Okay.
So I don't know if I can use it on all the rest of my hedges.
Yes, you can. Okay, so the 14-14-14, Eileen, means that the bag is 14% nitrogen, 14% phosphorus, and 14% potassium. You need the nitrogen. It's the most important ingredient on the plant for the plant because it helps the plant grow leaves, and that's why it's the first number on the bag. The second number is phosphorus, and that is for fruit and flowers and root production, so that's important to shrubs too. It's the second most important. And then the third is potassium, and it creates thicker cell walls, and thicker cell walls can handle stress. So the 14-14-14 is actually 52%, 42%? Let's see, 2028, Tony's going to kill me. 42% fertilizer, and so that means the rest of the bag is filler inert ingredients. So it doesn't matter if you buy a 10-pound bag, a 25-pound bag, or a 50-pound bag, the analysis is still the same. So yes, you can put it on your clusias. It's fine to put it on your clusia, but you can also use it for other plants. All right?
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I love your show.
Thank you, Eileen. That's wonderful. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. Okay. And Jerry, we're coming up onto a hard break, so we're going to take you in just a minute. You've got a great question. You have one of my favorite hibiscuses that I love to plant. So you're going to be back. We're going to be back with more Better Lawns and Gardens. If it's Saturday morning, this is where you're at. From the Summit Responsible Solutions, I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We still have time to take your call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. Let's go to Jerry in Citrus County. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Teresa. How are you?
I am great.
I'd like more information. I heard about this Hollywood hibiscus series. And I was wondering, you know, what the situation is for growing it and the cold hardiness. Is it equal to the old single red?
Okay,
that
so
was around for years.
Well, citrus. Hollywood hibiscus are great, Jerry. I use them in all of my tropical landscapes. They're beautiful. They are hibiscus, and so they will get knocked back by the wintertime. But these hibiscus stay around 4 feet tall. Okay, so you never need to prune them. And they bloom constantly all year round. The colors are amazing. So I really do recommend them. I mean, if you want to have the taller hibiscus that need to be cut like 2 times a year, then that's fine. I mean, there are purposes for those in the landscape to have a taller one for a background. But I really love the Hollywood hibiscus for all the variety of colors. And they're very low maintenance. You don't need to cut them.
Oh, that's very good. And they're cold hardy to some degree. They're comfortable come back from freezes.
Yeah, they should come back. It just depends on how cold they are. And you're in Citrus County, so it may be a little bit of a push. You know, I would say that I would get them, but make sure you have frost blanket to put on them in the wintertime.
Oh, okay. I understand then.
Okay.
Thank you, Teresa.
You're welcome. It's nice to hear from you, Jerry. Take care, hon. All right. That's Jerry. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. So May is, we're still in our dry season, and so with the temperatures that we are experience. We're going to get a little bit of rain this weekend, which is very good. But you want to make sure you're irrigating at least twice a week so that you're putting down 1.5 inches of water a week. You also want to make sure that you go ahead and fertilize after this rain that we're getting. You want to make sure the plant's good and hydrated with a slow-release, no-phosphorus fertilizer for your regular shrubs and plants that are not flowering. And then also, too, with the stress we're having with this drought, we're going to see chinch bugs. So walk your yards on a regular basis. Make sure that you do not have an insect problem starting. Walk your grass. Make sure that you don't see any dead areas. You want to catch those very quickly so that it's a problem that can be controlled very easily rather than destroying your whole yard and you having to replace your yard. So May is a good month if you'd like to have thicker bahia grass. This is a good month to go ahead and seed. And then Easter lilies. If you got Easter lilies for the holiday, go ahead and put them in the ground. If you got amaryllis, you can put them in the ground. And this is a time to go ahead and plant your poinsettias that you got for Christmas. All right, you can do all three of those right now. If you have any of the winter blooms, like the tulips, hyacinths, any of the bulbs you forced, they're not going to come back. Sorry to say. Go ahead and throw them in the compost pile. All right, and you can go ahead, and that will be good nutrition for your yard. Also, too, any of the ornamental grasses, and I still see this one house. I go by it nearly every week. They have not pruned their red fountain grass, Lizzie, in like 4 years. So it's a mixture of dead grass and, yeah, there's a little bit of red in there, but it's mostly dead grass. Ornamental grasses should all be removed now. So it's easier to do it in January, at the end of January, first part of February. You just cut it down to about 6 inches from the ground. But if you've got it now, go ahead. And if it's all dead fronds, go ahead and cut it back. You may be surprised it may be dead. Okay. But also, too, that new grass, the new fronds can't come up if it's just so filled.
So should they water it prior to cutting it? Because I know sometimes you do suggest.
Yeah, okay. I would suggest that, you know, I mean, where it is, it may be, you know, stressed out because there is no irrigation to it. Ooh. And that may be a reason to it. So The water is very important. So whenever you're going to fertilize, whenever you're going to cut a plant back, make sure it's hydrated about 3 to 4 days ahead of time. Go ahead and hand water it. Or make sure we've had a good rainfall so that the plant is hydrated. It can take the salt of the fertilizers. It can take the stress of being cut back. And it doesn't have to worry about staying alive. There's a Bee Gees song for that. All right. And so right now we're getting ready to come into hurricane season, June 1st. If you have not had your trees checked by a certified arborist, this is the time to do it. It's going to be less expensive than doing it during the hurricane season. Prices go up, you know.
And also appointments get booked out.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to get to you. Yeah, so this is
hard.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Get them now. Then also, too, you could add iron only to your grass if you just want to green it up. Okay, again, make sure it's hydrated first. Then you can put an iron-only application on. You have until June 1st to fertilize your lawn. If you have not done that, go ahead and do it this month. Palm trees need fertilizing with an 8-2-12-4. I'll say that again slowly. You want to have a slow-release palm fertilizer that has an analysis of 8-2-12-4. And that's going to give them the micronutrients they need to be healthy. Also, too, this is the last month to go ahead and cut your azaleas back and your camellias back, okay? Because starting in June and the first part of July, they are going to be producing buds for next winter and spring. And if you cut them later in the year, let's say you cut them in September, October, November, December, you're not going to get any blooms in the springtime. So April, May is a good month to go ahead and cut your azaleas back. They've all finished blooming by now. Go ahead and trim them back. You can trim them back by a third. so that if they're too high or too wide, cut them back by a third. That's not going to put any stress on the plant. They'll recover nicely, and they will bloom their little hearts out next year. Also, too, the bane of my existence, lubber grasshoppers, kill them. Kill them all. All right, if you see them in the road, if you hit them with your car, you get points.
Okay, but just, let's not do that. No, please don't do that, because then you might, you know, no, just don't. Just like she said, you can stomp them. On them. That's
stomp
good.
On them. Right. Stomp on them. Cut them in half.
All right, Grady Judd, take it down.
Okay, there you go. I hate
them. Kill
them
a lot.
Yes, kill them a lot. Also, too, you know, your compost piles can benefited by you turning them over. So they will decompose and keep on creating the pile. But if you put air into it and turn them over, they will go ahead and start to decompose quicker. Adding water to it. If we were getting regular rain, I would say, you know, you don't need to water it. But I would suggest that you water your compost pile. In Savannah and Charleston, we were up there on the Art and Bloom Garden Tour. They had lakes with solid, just covering the top of it, water lilies, native white water lilies that were just gorgeous and fragrant. And we have the native white water lilies here in Florida. So if you have a goldfish pond, if you have a water garden, this is the time of the year, from now through summertime, through September, October, to go ahead and feed your water lilies and lotus every month, all right? So it's also too late for most tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants. You want to use summer-tolerant vegetables that can take the heat. They will be in my newsletter coming out Monday. If you'd like to get my newsletter, you can go to my website, she-consulting.com. SHE-consulting.com, and sign up for my free newsletter. And I don't spam, and I just send out the newsletter. That's it. You can get that and know what to do in your garden. And I provide design tips. I provide my plant of the month. Lizzie has a column in there about her gardening and turkeys. And we just discuss what's going on. I have a section on landscape malpractice, how to know when to fire your landscaper.
Yes.
Also, too, bananas feed monthly. Papayas feed monthly. Your citrus, your grapes, and other fruits, go ahead and feed them. Prune back your blackberries and blueberries. And then feed your vegetables monthly with just a general all-around good fertilizer with micronutrients and your macronutrients. So that'll be good. Lizzie, we've had a great show today. Lots of callers. We'd like to thank them all.
Yes, and thank you to our listeners so much. Not only do you guys call, you text, you email Teresa, and if they have to email you a picture of something that they're asking about, how do they email you?
They email me at teresa.watkins@live.com. I was gone last week, so I'm getting to the messages. So, Linda, hang in there. I'm going to send your response today. Also, please remember to thank our sponsors, Black Cow, Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, Quality Green Specialists in DeLand, and Peterson's Nursery in Lakeland. Let them know you appreciate them sponsoring Better Lawns and Gardens so we can bring it to you free.
Yes, and go to Peterson's. What date is that?
It's May 11th next week.
Yes, you need to go that day to Peterson's Nursery in Lakeland.
Yes.
And you need to purchase those
red knockout roses.
There you go.
They're your knockout roses. Thank you, Lizzie, for producing the show. I certainly appreciate it. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, makers of mosquito bits and dunks, I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you missed any of the show, or you'd like to go back and listen to the older shows, you can catch them on podcasts at betterlawns.com. That is betterlawns.com.